Why don't you introduce the podcast
you
this time,
go
Marcus?
Ahead and do it.
Well, my name is Tate Alenik. This is Marcus, and we have a special guest with us tonight. We have Tyrell Johnson from Billings, Montana, and you are a sculptor.
Yes, I am.
You are now listening to Falling Out Radio.
Welcome back to the podcast. My name is Tate Alenik. This is Marcus, and you're listening to Fallen Hour Radio. So let's talk about, I mean, what got you started in sculpting? Like, what was your big inspiration? Was there inspiration, or did you just kind of fall into it?
Well, I grew up in a family of artists. My father's a sculptor. I'm the youngest of 16 kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so 12 natural born, 4 adopted, 2 girls, 10 boys, and 4 adopted boys.
Wow.
Wow. That's a big family.
So I had a lot of experience. I learned a lot from my siblings and my father. We made a lot of monuments. I worked at the foundry. I don't know, 16 or 17 is when I started there.
Wow.
So a lot of experience from that, and I'd say could rival any good college in the world. So
wow.
So I'm fortunate for that.
That's awesome. And tonight we have a kind of a different concept that you thought up. Is we're doing the podcast, but while we're doing the podcast, we're going to try to sculpt. And Mark, that is not Marcus's
yes,
work.
Yes, I got a head start. I was working on this earlier.
15 minutes ago, yeah. It was just a mass of thread.
Knocking this out. And yeah, I'm almost done. So. No, this is actually what he started, so...
It's awesome.
Yeah, I do that. Those.
It's actually pretty awesome.
When I want to wind down and have fun and not work on one of my actual concepts, I do those faces all the time.
Wow.
And just start over. I'll start over like that one. I'll come in and mess it up and start a new one some other time. So,
yeah,
like so just, you get to do that now.
Just this alone is just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Is. And, I mean, once you said, I know you said we're going to sculpt on the podcast, and then we got here. And I thought I seen these laying out, and I was like, yeah, we can do that. And then you said that, and I got the chills.
He was afraid to touch it.
I don't want to touch that. Because I know, like, when I do art, and work on an art piece or something, and I get to a place where I'm kind of happy with it, but then I want to go back and do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to, like, really, like, zero in what I'm doing, otherwise I'm going to mess up the whole thing in my head. That's what I thought about when I saw it. I'm going to mess it up.
That's the whole deal. You're just constantly messing up.
Right.
You just get better at messing up.
Yeah. Bob Ross.
Yeah.
Like, this already looks so good. Like, I'm afraid to touch it. Like, I'm messing up your work.
Give it a mustache.
Have at it. Yeah. I've destroyed hundreds of those.
Give it some chops or a goatee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Do you want to pull your mic in a little tighter? How does it sound, Marcus, to you?
I can even turn him up, man.
Is that better?
Yeah,
yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
Okay. You can probably pull his mic this way a little bit.
The entire mic?
Yeah.
All right, wherever you want to put it.
All right.
And that'll be the last time moving, I promise. Yeah. We did this. We did a podcast with my dad about a week ago, and we did Bigfoot, and man, I was moving the whole time.
Yeah,
he was talking, I was fixing the camera, and I was getting up and doing other stuff. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, so my dad was—he was loud himself. We told him, "All right, we'll just—you know—it's kind of noisy. You know, you hear every little thing." He's sitting there stirring his drink right in the mic.
Yeah. So I mean, we met you at Recover 2021, put on by Riley Wallery, and it was hard to get to you. We had all these other interviews lined up, and my wife was the one who was bombarding you to make sure that you stay there so we do the interview with you. And then I walk over and you're sitting there in the chair just kind of looking at us, and I was like, oh shoot, we gotta do yours still. And you're like the last one left in the whole the whole building.
I didn't know what you looked like. Like, I probably walked by you a billion times. It was like, I kept looking like, where the hell did he go?
Well, let's start off with how, once you start a project, I mean, what are some things you do to start? Like, are there any prep work, or is it just kind of... So there's this one thing I want to mention really quickly, is kind of my introduction of the way your mind worked, is when we were at Recover 2021, and I asked you, how do you start your projects? And I told you it was kind of like out of a book, a lot of these things that you're creating. And you said, well, maybe I'll start an ox horn, and And I was like, okay, cool. So Oxhorn's awesome. And then you said, then you went a step further. You're like, but it'll be a girl trapped inside of an Oxhorn.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's like,
mind blown. Huh? Yeah. The narrative is the most important part, in my opinion. And then design. So sometimes the design comes first, then the narrative. Sometimes the narrative, then design. Sometimes, so you saw those pieces of wood that are stacked in my living room?
Right, yeah.
Those sit there until something comes, because those are like special pieces of wood. And so, like Undivided Love here, that was that way. I set a big slab of wood against the wall, and one day that idea came.
Wow.
But otherwise, sometimes it just pops in my head while I'm out somewhere else, and then I have to kind of reverse engineer it out of here.
Right.
So that's the process.
And we talked at the art show, and I asked you if you ever wanted to do a podcast or actually do a, I don't think I asked you actually. I think you asked, you mentioned that you wanted to do a video project of where you were working on the art piece.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to work on the art piece or work on your sculpting, but you're talking about something totally different and or wrapping around back to that piece. And I was like, that would be an awesome video. So I still want to do that in another kind of format, another kind of way. I think it'd be kind of awesome to do something like that. But let's have Marcus go trail on here while I get my... I haven't even started on my clay yet.
Yeah, trail on the what?
I don't know. What exactly do you want to talk about? Let's get creepy.
Yeah, let's... I'm going to do something creepy here.
Like you see Seidel. Seidel, he's really into, like, let's say, aliens, UFOs, that kind of thing. And he wants so badly for aliens to be real. Like, yes. You know, if they're real, it's already in his mind.
Of course they're real.
They're real. You know?
And we're getting closer.
So, like, I'm like, yeah, like, that thought, you know, I was like, no, I think that too. Like, yeah, there's probably something out there, but I don't know in the way that people think. I think there is probably is something alive out there, but not, like, humanoid type freaking lizard man.
Well,
like,
this is the first time. That, but the first time I'm hearing this, Morgan.
So when it comes to, like, you know,
you're fired from the pod.
When it comes to, like, UFOs and stuff, like, I'm like, yeah, okay, there's... I mean, I've seen some pretty weird things myself, but he's like, aliens, you know? And me, I'm like, no, it's the government, man. So we're, like, kind of, like... Like, you know, a little different in our thoughts, but
somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, now it's government's always there. I mean, especially the UFOs, there's always got to be something going on there. But, I mean, I love aliens, but they scare the hell out of me. So, like, I watch, we did a research, we were researching one night, and Marcus was there, and we're doing one on Men in Black, and we were up late at night, and we're watching these YouTube videos at my house, and we're watching these Men in Black videos, and we're fine, totally fine, and then all of a sudden, we just kind of felt kind of creepy in the house, and then, he left, and I woke up the next day, and I turned on the TV, and there's still YouTube was up, and I was like, "Oh, geez, like this." I'm home alone too, and then I actually had my son with me, and he woke up, and I usually put on like Bob's Burgers or something, and I go to the room, and I have this creepy feeling already now because I just remember that video we watched the night before, and I get in there, turn on Bob's Burgers, and for some reason the coloration on them is like really discolored. And it's like
on the TV.
Yeah, it's like the menu and everything was fine. I got to Hulu, Bob's Burgers, and it was opaque, like their skin color, and their eyes were like the eyes of Coraline. They're black, and I was like, "What the deuce?" And then I called Lethea and told her about it, and I recorded it, and then I sent it to her, but I didn't save the video.
Like, it just looked unsettling to him.
Yeah, it was freaking scary.
He thought the government were trying to creep him out.
Yeah, they probably were.
Messing with you. Like,
yeah, they're going to use Bob's Burgers to creep you out.
Possible, they would.
Like, really? You're getting creeped out by Bob's Burgers?
Yes.
He was so set on, they're messing with me.
Like, let's
you sound crazy.
Let's get into what you got. I mean, you said you had some stories. And when I asked you if you wanted to do the podcast, you're into it.
Oh yeah, I've been anything cryptid, mysterious, anything. I go into it.
So have you had any of your own experiences or?
Yeah, it started like my obsession kind of started when I was pretty young, around 6 years old. So there goes credibility there, of course, with most people.
Yeah.
But we used to play hide and seek in an abandoned house that my dad used to sculpt in as a studio. And there was kind of an upstairs loft where the stairs led, and that's it. And then there was an attic, and then there was a window that went out onto the roof, but that was a hinged piece of plywood.
Right.
So, and we used to always climb out on the roof there, which at 6 years old, probably not the wisest thing, but we're all running along and I'm having one of those, hey guys, wait up for me kind of moments. And all of a sudden I hear that window hit the wall up there. It swung open. And I look up, and there was what now I can only describe as a juvenile Bigfoot. So,
oh wow.
And it was looking right at me. It filled the frame. It was pretty good size for what I gathered, age-wise at the time. I didn't have a clue what I was looking at.
Yeah.
So I ran as fast as I could to get my siblings, and I was like, hey guys, I saw something scary. And
but this was in the house?
It was in the house where we were going to go play hide and seek.
Whoa.
Oh, God.
And so so they all said I was imagining something, or one of our older brothers was messing with us. And I was like, there's no way. It's not even possible.
Yeah.
And so we go in, we're playing hide and seek, and I hide in a closet in the furthest possible location from that staircase where I saw that. And I hear this scream, and it was pretty loud. And I was like, more scared, obviously. So I run up the stairs where everyone's at, and apparently my niece Anna, she said she had seen some red eyes.
Oh, geez.
In the attic. So the attic was right next to that window, and it was just an open door frame.
Yeah.
And it was pitch black in there aside from the ambient light, and there, you know, it was just rafters and no one's seeing it. And I say, Anna, where is it? Point to it. And she points straight back, and there they were. They were just like straight back. And I said, I see him. So someone's like, let's go back there. And I've always been, this is indicative of my personality. I headed straight for the eyes. But I'm walking across rafters.
Yeah.
And so I had to, every 2 feet you have a rafter. So I had to watch where I was walking. And then at some point I get kind of scared, and I get, you know, like that hair on your neck kind of feeling.
Yeah. And I'm like,
oh shit.
Yeah.
So I look up, and there they are. I would say two rafters away. So 4 feet, staring right at me. A little taller than me, of course. But they were bright red, and I have no way to describe it. To me, it's one of the most poignant memories of my childhood. Yeah. Aside from, you know, a few neat memories, catching a bull snake with my brother, you know, those kind of things. It's way up there.
It's one of those that just always stick with you.
There's no way, and that's why it's just stuck. That's why I kind of dove into Bigfoot, which happened later. Because I'm here staring at these red eyes, and I turn to my brother Johnny. He's over by the chimney. I said, Johnny, they're right in front of me. And I don't know if he got scared or if he just thought better of it, but he's like, we should go back. So I'm like, all right. You know, I'm his little brother.
Yeah.
So I turn my back to these red eyes and this thing that I'd already seen, which when I saw it in the window, I still, even thinking about it, it just felt like a kind experience, kind demeanor.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I turn my back and I start walking, looking down at the rafters, and I was scared then for sure.
Oh, I would be too.
But made it back, and that was it. And then, I don't know, I was always into animals, you name it, and watched a lot of Discovery. And one day on Discovery Channel, they had the Patterson film, and when I saw that footage, I was like, that is what I saw. I saw a baby version of that. Yeah. Same face, everything. It was just like this experience I had was real, because I had been convinced that it wasn't.
Yeah.
That it was a prank or something. And this,
Until I saw that,
and it was like, that is what I saw. Every detail.
Inside of the house, that is like something new.
But it was an abandoned house.
Oh, okay.
So that makes more sense.
Right,
so my dad would sculpt in there, but we had the foundry up the street, and he spent, you know, obviously a lot of time there. And I'm not even sculpting. it was profound, and no one could ever convince me otherwise. But
yeah.
And obviously I've gone into down the rabbit hole as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, like it always leads to that, man. You start getting into it, start looking into it, and then you're just lost in it.
Man, hours upon hours on YouTube. And man, we used to research, well, we didn't research at the time, we were just freaking into this creepy stuff, and we would always sit around our computer at our old house, and we would search nothing but ghost videos.
Both of you at the same time?
Yeah.
Nice.
Ghost videos. And
at one point, there was 15, 20 of us in one room crowded around us, because we went like so far into YouTube and stuff. It was like the black web. You had to click certain videos, and it's like a trail to get to videos you can't find.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and that's how it is still.
So you try to search it,
you're
not going to find it. You know, so we had to try to remember what videos we clicked on to get to these certain ones that were just, man, disturbing, you know, like really disturbing.
So we had, when my oldest daughter was about two, the house we lived in was really scary, haunted, kind of scary. The owner of the house at the time, he told us that his sister lived there for years, but she would never inhabit the basement.
Uh-huh.
She wouldn't even go there. She wouldn't even go downstairs. So when we move in, we're like, oh, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But so our bedroom's downstairs. Always had an eerie feeling down there, especially when I was changing, because I had the dresser in this certain closet where I would change, a walk-in closet. And
yeah.
But, there was one time I was upstairs watching a movie, and my daughter was sleeping in the crib downstairs.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, I should go check on her. And I go downstairs. As soon as I turn that corner, I see an apparition bent over her crib.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like it's looking at her, and I could see the head and the shoulders, and it just tapered into nothing, you know, disappeared.
Whoa.
And as soon as I laid eyes on it, it disappeared.
Wow.
And then to make it even weirder, there was... we had kids we watched, and one of the boys was really kind of a sweet, sensitive type. But he was talking out the side window to someone, and my wife asked him who he was talking to. He's like, oh, the little boy and girl. And there's no one out there.
She goes, that's creepy. God.
And then that's where, like, that tied in something else that had been happening. So I'm kind of out of order now. So... I don't know how many times in that house we would hear, like, upstairs, just like, and for the first five times I thought it was an intruder. I would actually go up there with a knife or whatever I could grab, thinking I was going to defend my home.
Wow.
Never anything. So it just, but it sounded like little children playing around.
That actually reminds me of a story. I used to, you know, I'd go hang out, you know, with some friends, and one of my friends, he lived in this apartment building. It was like a townhouse.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, in this big building, it was two townhouses, you know, put together. So it was one building, two doors. And I remember we were hanging out there one night and just, you know, playing Halo and stuff like that, hanging
Halo.
Out, having, you know, having some drinks and stuff, whatever. And his girlfriend, she had a, you know, a little girl. But yeah, we were hanging out there, you know, and I ended up staying the night there. You know, I was like, I got a little too buzzed up, you know, like didn't want to go, you know. Woke up the next morning and everybody's in the living room, and they're like, oh, we're gonna go grab something to eat, man, what do you want? And so they went to go get Subway, and I was like, yeah, I'll hang out here, you know. I just kind of sat there on the couch, and I can hear his her girl playing upstairs, and you know, the bathroom was upstairs. So I went up there, and the bathroom was right here, and her bedroom's right there, and the door was cracked about maybe 6 inches wide, and I could see her in there playing, you know, grabbing some toys and stuff. And I go in the bathroom, and you know, after that I just walk back downstairs, and I can hear her playing up there. And they finally get back maybe about 25 minutes later, and I was like, oh, your girl woke up, you know, she's up there playing. And they kind of look at each other and look at me, and they said, she's not here. They told me that she stayed at her aunt's house last night.
So there's no one up there.
There was nobody there. And I was like, oh. I was like, well, no, I thought I saw her, but maybe it was just my eyes playing tricks on me, you know. And I said, but I could hear kids running around upstairs and playing. And I said, it's probably the neighbors next door. And that's when they told me that building's been vacant. There's nobody in the townhouse next to it.
Oh my god!
So the entire building, I was the only one in there. The townhouse that's conjoined with it has been empty for months. So I was hearing somebody running around playing that whole time, and there was nobody in that building but myself.
Oh my gosh!
And you know, I was like, "All right, man, this is creeping me out." You know, I left. I come back later to pick something up. I think I left the Xbox there so they can play and all that, but I came back later that night and we were kind of talking about it, and her daughter came home and she comes downstairs and she said, "Mom, that girl upstairs is being mean to me." And they're like,
"Oh, yuck."
And so, "Well, what does she look like?" And she said, "She's about my age, but she's really mean. She keeps trying to hit me and stuff, and it keeps taking my toys away. And there's nobody up there but her."
And the girl. So
that just kind of confirmed what I was seeing, you know. It kind of freaked me out. Yeah, they didn't stay there very long. They ended up moving out.
I don't blame them. I mean, the more you look into it, the more, especially with children.
Yeah.
Like, especially six-year-olds and that kind of that age group. There's so many, like, well, for example, imaginary friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's a... We wanted to do an episode on that in the future.
Because, yeah, like, to me, I don't think it's in their mind, or either they probably conjure something thinking of, like, you know, something there. But
well, of course, there's a certain percentage of them that are just making it up, but there's parents that corroborate, like, crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I told them I wanted to do one on imaginary friends because my little cousin had an imaginary friend, and... Man, doors would close and lock and everything, and there'd be nobody in there. It creeped me out.
Me and my sister killed it.
Yeah, she told me. Oh, what did you tell her?
We told her Dolores started acting like she's beating something up, and anyways, our cousin's just freaking out, and then she says, "I'm going to kill it," because this thing was getting creepy, and then Dolores starts stomping on the ground and whatnot, and then after that, we didn't hear about this imaginary friend, which is kind of odd.
That's horrible. But that child turned out okay.
Yeah, kind of. She's a weirdo still.
Yeah. Well, what's our excuse?
But I saw a picture of a child in one of those, you know, playhouses like in McDonald's or something. And that next to that child is a really a creepy face. And they asked her who was in that playground with her. And she said it was her imaginary friend. And there was nobody else in that playground with her. They were the only people playing there at the time. And that's when I told them I wanted to do one about imaginary friends and stuff. So it's on the list.
To-do list, I'm sure.
Well, there's always to get more podcasty with it. There's always especially in some of these demonology researchers and things like that, is they always point to there's always a doorway.
Yeah.
And
the kids,
yeah, and then the kids are really susceptible to it too, because they're more open to spiritual things, I guess, as they can be more sensitive to seeing a ghost or having experience as a child, is because they have like a sense of innocence, so they're not so guarded as an adult would be. Mm-hmm. So they have like, it's almost like that notion of a childlike faith, of where they can believe in something, and sometimes things come true. You know what I mean? That is like, there's like a belief system that they have, and then it births that. And with
because there was nobody there to tell them that it wasn't possible. You
know? Right. Yeah. You know? And something like imaginary friend is almost like a doorway, because they could have one. And if there's some other element inside of the home, whether that's, there's theories about like cursed objects or, having a certain image in your house that can bring, also have a doorway to it and things like that, and then also attach itself to what would be their imaginary friend.
Okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying there.
It's kind of crazy. It's like a really extensive kind of thing.
I've heard stories of, you know, because kids, usually girl children, you know, female children, like, you know, the emotions and stuff like that, or when they're going through stages of their life growing up, that it can cause things in your house to happen.
What do you mean?
Like, it, because of they all say that, like, you know, spirits and stuff are, you know, kind of come out more when your senses are different. Like, let's say you're angry, it can kind of bring something out.
Right.
Or if you're sad, it could bring something out. And when children go through a certain stage, like puberty and stuff, growing up, they're really emotional.
Right.
So I've heard stories of things starting to happening in people's houses during that time, and they say that's probably what it's contributed to.
Weird.
Yeah, you never heard that?
I've never heard that kind of theory, no.
Well, if you read about like astral projection and...
Yeah.
Right.
That's something they warn against in particular is your intent as you travel outside your body.
Yeah.
Marcus is really big in the astral projection right now.
Yeah, like it's kind of something I've really been looking into and all that. Because I've told him I've had some weird stories, man, but...
I'm having a hard time getting an owl's body going, so I'm just going to go with it. I'm pretty sure Marcus has a mustache in that thing by now.
No, I don't. No mustache.
I'm going for the demon you asked for. So
oh, nice.
See. This is a sad, soft little demon.
He messaged last night and he was like, is there anything you want me to sculpt quickly? And I was like, I don't know, a demon would be kind of cool to see his rendition on that. And then I was like, maybe Deer Woman. I haven't seen a Deer Woman sculpture.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be tough.
The sculpture that I have in my house, it was created by an artist, and he does almost like traditional style, like what would you call it?
Western style, native style art,
nature, yeah, things like that. And he has a mind for. We didn't know this until we saw that picture. As we knew him for a while, and then we started going through his Facebook and or his Facebook fan page, and then that picture popped up with Deer Woman, but she wasn't finished yet. It would just look like an alien, and I was like, "Whoa, that's freaking awesome!" And then
that's the one you sent me. It was his.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I wanted to buy that one, and then he just ended up giving it to us for moving. And I was like, "Oh, cool, thanks." And he also painted us a picture for our family. There was like three horses at the time. We landed three of us at the time, and painted us a picture. And then he gave us that picture, and it was finished. And he added dreadlocks on it and design like a design on the head. But he said when he had that, he would go to art shows around different reservations. And there was one in particular he went to, and he took that Deer Woman with him. And this elder of the tribe comes up at the art show, and she's totally freaked out by that thing.
Because
they in Native American cultures, they have the thing about Deer Woman in some cultures, and she was freaked out about it and started speaking in her native language to him and started like getting mad at him. And I was like, that's the reason I wanted to get it. I was like, I want that painting.
Isn't that kind of like Wendigo, or is that a whole different ball?
It's what do you I don't know. What's a I don't think I've ever looked into a Wendigo.
It's kind of like that, but it's just a little different. It's mostly about you know, it's this creature that preys on the immoral, I guess you can say.
Oh, right. So there's a story about somebody cheating on their wife or boyfriend or something.
Yeah, and she kind of punishes them.
And then she kind of is like the punisher of that.
Oh.
Or if they commit like murder or something, she's the one that goes in there and is like the settler of that, I guess.
Yeah. So that's kind of what she does. She just, but she... What she does is she tries to tempt them and lure them into doing something wrong, and if they do it, she kills them.
Just like so a stupid idea.
She kind of baits you, and then
yeah,
like a North American siren.
Yeah, that's actually the perfect word for it.
So since you guys are native, what are your? Have you looked into little people and?
Oh yeah, all the time.
It's hard to find anything on it.
Yeah. And we have, we have family here who's a Crow, and then we're actually enrolled in Washington, and called the Soxhawala Tribe, and it's a tribe of like 250 members, and it's mostly family.
300
yeah, now.
320,
300. That's crazy.
And down that way, they have a thing called the Stick Indian. And we've heard this growing up, especially going down there and visiting as a kid.
Yeah.
And they'd always had this thing about the Stick Indian. And we didn't know too much about it until recently. And then now it kind of seems like that's a Bigfoot, the way they describe it.
In some stories, the description is basically Bigfoot-like.
Yeah, it's
in
weird.
In others, it's more cannibalistic creepy, like, I don't know. That switch
stuff. But the little people, I actually have a painting from the same artist, and he painted, it's the crow version of little people, because that's like big down there, because the Pryor Mountains is like all on reservation. Caves. Yeah. And they have, I mean, we hear stories all the time of altars that are down there right now still. Yeah. And that are little altars, and people go down there and actually leave tobacco on their altars and bring alcohol and things like that.
Yeah, there's stories that things that still happen. I have a friend, and he swears that they've seen one. I think twice now. He always goes up to the mountains and stuff, and he was like, no, I'm not lying, you know. He described, you know, what happened and everything, and I told him I want to actually get his whole story and, you know, have it done on the podcast. And he swears, man. He swears he's seen one.
Wow.
So that's they're still being seen and everything. And I even met somebody up in Bridger, like outside of Bridger. He lives in the mountains. And he told me a crazy story that he was driving through, like, you know, this little road that goes in between these big, really tall rock walls, and they're nothing but caves. And he says he was driving home from the bar one night, and it was around midnight, and a rock hit his car, you know, when he was driving through there. And he said he hit the brakes, got out, got his flashlight, and kind of started looking around, and he pointed it into one of those caves about maybe 30 feet up. And he said that he saw hair, like, pulling back into the cave. Like, he just shined a light, and they're kind of pulling away. And he started yelling. He thought it was kids or something messing around, but, man, that's in the middle of nowhere, you know? And once he started kind of threatening him and yelling around, rocks started flying out of all those caves at him and hitting his truck. And some of them were bigger than this, like the width of this little table here.
Mm-hmm.
He said they're, like, you know, really big, come flying out. There's no way a child can throw something like that, you know? And I remember he said his car was all beat up, and he said, I just hauled ass through there, you know, and got home.
Is that the dirt road between Edgar and Pryor?
I'm not sure. It goes deep in the mountains, man. Like, I've never been up there. Yeah. But he has a cabin up there. I don't know how many miles in, but he said he went back to the bar the next day and said, you know, somebody was throwing all these things at his car and everything, and that person told him it was, you know, I think you've had an encounter with the little people, and that's where he learned the whole story behind them and everything. He told me stuff about them that I've never even heard, you know, and I grew up in, well, Crow.
Yeah. So do you have, like, any, what do you believe a spirit would be?
As far as, you know, I told you, I listened to a lot of physics along the lines of Tesla, Heaviside. And so, you know, non-Newtonian physics, basically, which I think is a cult. But that, as far as what they are, I'm not too concerned, because it's too obvious that they exist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have all sorts of phenomena, such as, like, I started seeing auras when I was a freshman, had no idea what it was. And so I never told anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clearly real, but it's never been studied. So as far as what it is, I'm not too concerned until people actually start doing research into the non-physical, as opposed to this Newtonian obsession with what bumps together, you know.
Do you think, like, in your mind, that, because we were just talking about the government earlier, do you think they have their take on what a ghost is, or what a alien is, or Bigfoot, maybe?
There's tons of documents that show that they did research into the mental side of non-physical phenomena. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's tons of it. And there's plenty of people who testified to it.
Right.
So, and I, you know, I have a whole another spiel on why I think that's buried, because it's, the mind is the ultimate free technology. We are, I mean, we're born to be creators, and we're trapped in a world that's based in the physical. So we don't create, because we're obsessed with the physical.
Right.
Here, now, past, you know, it's never. Even our psychology is backwards in that sense. We look outside for the solutions, So I think the same thing goes wrong, is what's gone wrong in a sense with the metaphysical, the cryptids, whatever, you name it.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously, some of them I don't necessarily believe in, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The chupacabra, for example, I'm not exactly.
Have you seen the footage on the El Chupacabra?
Not anything new.
The old stuff?
Yeah.
Like, what do you think they look like?
So that's the problem. It's become wildly within just... So take eyewitness examples of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Almost always somewhere in this same field. And then you got people like Jeff Meldrum, who are amazing for having the balls to stand up for it. But it's like, and then there's Native American legends, Native legends all over the world about Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Chupacabra is relatively new.
Yeah.
I guess it would be kind of new, wouldn't it?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It started in Mexico.
Yeah. A lot of things start in Mexico.
I was telling Cidel, I don't know if he actually looked it up, but they say they actually found one and it wasn't what they thought it was. It wasn't like this big beast.
What, El Chupacabra?
Yeah, and it turned out to be some kind of canine type dog.
Yeah.
And it was like just a little dog that looks like a hybrid, yeah, between a wolf and a coyote or something like that.
Or a dog with mange.
Yeah, a dog with mange. But after I saw that, I was like, okay, maybe it's real.
I'm going to do this thing, and then you're going to do that. And then he's going to turn that thing around and be like, gosh damn it, look at this much.
Oh, I'm ending up with low-hanging fruit here. It looks like a mix between between Underworld and Avengers. So it's kind of corny, typical face.
Well, we did a half hour there, and we're up to probably like 40 minutes now.
Wow.
I think. But we're getting there.
Yeah.
Any other questions there, Marcus?
About?
It's up to you. I'm going.
About what?
When I get busy, sometimes I just zone out.
I know. I get the same way, so I'm kind of like trying to get focused.
Sculpting and talking.
It's a cool concept. Maybe we'll have to do this like once a month.
Heck yeah. I that's what I was talking to you about at that art show. I was like, I want to talk to you guys about, you know, how doable is it for me to sculpt with like local personalities, you know, DJs.
Right. I mean, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, it is a cool idea.
Yeah, and talk about anything, you know, it even had to be.
Then you got us sculpting, and that's like a freaking...
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool concept. You got to get yourself a camera and get yourself something like this and start doing that.
Yeah.
But for now, we can take you on.
Well, maybe after show season is over.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Maybe that's when I start messing around.
So what's your favorite... cryptid, like what interests you the most?
Obviously Bigfoot, but
Bigfoot? Well, I mean, because of your experience, or
yeah, just because I, and then, you know, you've got, I mean, I don't, I forget his name, but there's a CIA fingerprint specialist that in one of his areas of expertise was primate fingerprints.
Oh, really?
And he studied the casts at Jeff Meldrum's place, and he said he didn't believe in them at all when he started, and then he said there's beyond a shadow of a doubt those are real prints.
Interesting.
Because he found anomalies such as broken metatarsals that impacted the way the foot shape was,
yeah,
and the way the body weight was placed on the foot. I mean, so when you get that many very intelligent people who got the balls to talk about something like that. So that's the problem with science, is it's all peer reviewed. It's all
right,
like this. So any true breakthrough in science is always going to be done by someone outside of science. Yeah. Always.
So what is your, I mean, probably get off this, I didn't want to talk about Bigfoot, but now I have this thing pop in my head. A good question. game.
What's that?
What do you think about all? Have you been watching the news? I mean, you've been seeing all these.
I dropped off of that a while ago.
You're on Facebook.
I sculpt and I listen to YouTube, and then I stay out of that.
So whole what's coronavirus? Have thing. You heard anything about what's going on with UFO disclosures right now?
Kind of, yeah.
What's your take on that? Like, do you think that they're so there's a whole thing about why they started to put out more information on UFOs in this past year, especially with COVID, and now they're trying to follow that up with a disclosure from the United States about UFOs. Like, what do you think? Like, what's your take on that? Do you think they're trying to cover up something else? Like, are they trying to hide something bigger than that and trying to cover that with UFOs? And like, finally, we're gonna disclose something about UFOs.
We're gonna give you what you want,
right?
UFOs.
But I think in the history of the U.S., especially, you know, I mean, we have people like J.P. Morgan. Mm.
The fraud guy?
Titanic,
that guy?
Nope. Early, okay. You know, one of the wealthiest men in American history.
Right.
They went on record talking about how they bought president.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And that's during Tesla's day, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, pretty much everything that we are saddled with, I guess, anything that we're experiencing is a form of population manipulation in some sort of sense. But as far as the UFO disclosure, it's like, I mean, Stephen Greer off, you know, was unacknowledged. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
I kind of come around to his side of things. So it's kind of hard to put that in a...
What's his side of things? Like, what's his take on it?
That, you know, the whole Roswell thing was real and that it was reverse engineered and now the government has them and has been using them for some time and the disclosure is just a means for them to fabricate an attack on the public to create basically a 9/11 type, another 9/11 in a galactic scale.
So what do you think his motive the government was to do that, what their motive would be?
That's the problem. That's where I get a little
iffy about it.
Yeah, well, that's where, like, I was talking about my golden calf theory, which would take hours to kind of sort out in my own words.
Right.
But I think it has a lot to do with the golden calf kind of behavior of powerful people. Because, you know, the number one thing is, why would someone want all that money? It's not about money, so what is it? You know, and then...
Yeah.
So, but that's not... Yeah. Not necessarily.
I mentioned J.P. Morgan because we did one of our first podcasts was...
The Titanic.
And then there's like...
The Titanic conspiracy.
Oh, there is? I've never heard one about that.
You haven't heard that?
No.
Well, let me fill you in. But it's J.P. Morgan was a wealthy investor. Well, he was like one of the wealthiest people back then, and he had his own fleet of ships called the Starliner or something like that. Starliners or something like that.
I can't remember.
Anyways, the night of the Titanic sinking, J.P. Morgan, 11 miles out, already had a ship of his own. And he had it out there, almost like just sitting there, waiting for this to happen before it even happened. And there was a document that put him out there.
No way.
And before that, a couple weeks before that, he ordered, geez, how many people were on the Titanic? Like over like 1,200, something like that?
I can't remember. It was quite a bit, though.
I know it happened in 1912, but he had, let's say he had like 1,000 life jackets on board. Mm-hmm. And he made sure he had those. He made sure he had 1,000 blankets on board. The ship was empty. It just had a pilot on, or a captain on board.
Yep.
And it was his ship, and he sailed it out there. And not only that, he had made sure he had enough lifeboats.
Yeah.
And I think how it happened was JP, the captain of that ship, reported back to I don't know how they did that, but they got word back to the shore that an accident happened with the Titanic.
Yeah.
And it was before that was to actually happen, and then it happened. And the thing was that J.P. Morgan, not only did he own his Starliners, but he owned the Titanic, or he was an investor in the Titanic. And he was, now J.P. Morgan's like this big old insurance thing, and they thought he was trying to commit insurance fraud back then.
That's what I said. Yeah, I said and it has to be insurance fraud.
Sink the ship, save the people, and
be the hero.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it was World War One or World War Two, but Rothschild, the father, the antiquities dealer, he basically crashed the whole British stock market because he knew the outcome of a battle, so he reported the opposite of that. It hit the papers, stock market crashed, he bought up a vast majority of the stocks, therefore he technically took over Britain.
Oh, wow.
In theory. I don't know if all my facts are right.
I believe you.
No, I don't know, like, the exact details, but it's like, yeah, that's cunning, and, you know, they've gotten more cunning since then.
Right.
But speaking of the Titanic, I got a question for you guys.
Okay.
Kind of doubles back on the We Are Creators, the 100th monkey. You ever gone into any of that?
Like, no.
No, I have not.
So scientists, I don't know, in the 60s, they realized that, like, a group of monkeys in Africa start using something a certain way, a tool or something. And they find out that down in South America, pretty soon, after a certain number of monkeys in Africa started using this tool, pretty soon they have this happening in South America, and it was coined the 100th monkey phenomenon or something like that.
Interesting.
But then you read books about the metaphysical, and you come across things like there was a book written about a boat described almost identical to the Titanic. It was called Titania or something.
Uh-huh.
In a book prior to the Titanic.
Titan.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
And then that, you know, not too long after that, the Titanic comes about, and the exact story plays out in real life.
You know what happened? Huh. Is the oh, what was this guy? He was the author of one of those books, and he also, I think he was, I don't know how many years, you know how many years ago, or before the Titanic sank, that book came out?
Mm-mm.
I think he was right along the time in that era of the Titanic. And they talked about this big, massive ship, Titan, and there was a lot of information in that book that was corresponding with what was happening with the Titanic at the time.
Okay.
What with insurance fraud and things like that, and you just reminded me of that. It's cool. Yeah,
that book was like basically almost like the blueprint to how that how the Titanic
and
sank.
The author,
yeah,
the author of that book was also set to be on board of the ship, the Titanic, but called off sick the day of.
A couple people did actually.
Yeah, and a couple of
smart people.
And J.P. Morgan was also said to be scheduled to be on the ship, and he called off a couple days before sick.
He wasn't sick. He was photographed in a different country with his mistress.
Yeah, while that was happening.
While the Titanic sank.
So I guess he wasn't on the Starliner, but he was making sure that thing happened. Yeah, like predicted the Titanic, right?
Yeah, the speed, cool. where it crashed.
How it everything. Crashed. How many people were on board, I think, too.
The description of the boat, everything was pretty much exact.
Yeah. And then you find that is very common in a lot of, I mean, people who research that, there's a lot of that type of stuff that happens where, and that makes you wonder, like, so some future device is talked about in a book, like Orwell or something, and then all of a sudden we're using it every day. I mean, yeah. Like, there, I don't know, the whole truth is stranger than fiction is kind of my motto when it comes to all of that, all of the above.
But yeah, that's the right. I was like, whatever, you know. Like, he was like, oh, let's do one on the Titanic. I was like, what? You're gonna do conspiracies now? And then, like, when I finally got into it, I was like, they sank that ship. It's like, no question, they sank it.
It was one of our. It was our first podcast.
It was
together.
Yeah.
And Marcus was quiet the entire time. He was like, yeah, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. He had his mic on, and I was just sitting there nodding.
So were you doing podcasts prior to him joining you?
Yeah, like a couple podcasts before Marcus jumped on. Then I called him, and I said, do you want to join the podcast? And he was like, yeah, I'll try it out. And then now he makes all the music and edits the audio and all that stuff.
And
that's pretty awesome.
became the favorite.
The crowd favorite.
Yeah, we get these we get these reviews from people, and they say they love the host and everything, and then we never say who the host is.
Yeah.
But I'm the host. But
Seattle got called
Fight.
Yeah. That's so funny. And Rogue's like, oh no, Seattle's the host. I'm just
And I'm then our biggest demographic is actually women.
Yeah. And I told him, you're welcome.
You have good taste.
Yeah. Mark's like, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
It's like they just want to see the freak show that is Marcus.
That's because he's flexing all the time.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, well, why don't you go ahead and start trying to, you know, share these and market that and whatever and try to get the podcast going. And mostly women started getting on there, and I told them, yep, I told you.
This is the best movie you ever made, brother. Bringing this fella on.
That's funny. What?
Man.
We get some weird stories, though. We do. We get a lot of weird stories.
Yeah, we do.
From people reaching out. Yeah.
I'm not sure if we want to put some ears in that thing or not. What do you think? Looks like a barn owl almost.
What are you going to make?
I was thinking like about Tufts? An owl. Yeah. Tufts, yeah.
Yeah, like, man, people stop me, you know, all the time, and then they just start telling me these weird stories. Like, oh, you do that, you know, those podcasts, those videos and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, that's me. And they just, oh, man, I got a story. And then they start trailing on, man. But I get some pretty cool stories. I'm like, man, you want to jump on, record you? That's like, I don't know, man.
We always try to get
tell my story.
We always try to get people on, but they always be scared.
Yeah, they're always afraid.
I was a little worried about expressing my personal opinions, given the fact that I'm an artist. But
right. Well, that's yeah. I guess you would probably express that with your art pieces, right?
Well, I mean, just like people thinking I'm a nut job is well, I guess what do they say? A scandal's better than not being known, you know, in the art world. It's better to be scandalous than to be unknown. But, I don't know.
Yeah, I was telling Cidel that, well, even if it's a bad review or a bad comment, they're still there. You
know? They still love us.
He loves the controversy.
We get some backlash for some of the stuff we do, like especially Native American lore. Because they like to really keep that guard. Then me and Mark was like, I don't care, we're going to put it out there. I think people need to hear about it.
The like, people need this. Yeah. Don't you understand?
And then that's kind of what we became known for this past year, is putting out Native American lore.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
What's funny is like a lot of the people that were kind of trying to get mad at us about doing it weren't even Native American.
I know.
And all the people that were Native American were telling us, we want you to do more of those, you know. So it was kind of backwards. Like, I thought it was going to be the other way around, but
it's really hard though to get somebody who's knowledgeable of Native American lore or culture to come on and talk about. Yeah. They like to keep it guarded, especially some of the urban legends and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, when it comes to that stuff, it's a different world for them. They do not like that to get out. Hmm. You know, a lot of the stories and stuff. It's like, some of it seems kind of almost sacred in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people won't. But if you're down there, like I grew up on the reservation and just stories everywhere. Like a lot of really crazy stories.
Have you ever done a sculpture that's kind of creepy, or has it just been mostly other things?
So when I was young, I convinced myself that I was gonna be one of Jim Henson's best creature guys, you know, or you know, something like that. I was gonna make a name for myself,
right,
as a movie effects guy. And so it's fun, and it's 10 times easier than what I currently do. Right. Making something creepy is a million times easier.
Why do you think that? Why is that?
You're just exaggerating anatomy. So if you understand anatomy, the rest is
All right.
Yeah, and that's one thing, though. Those graphics artists, one thing they deserve credit for is being exceptionally skilled, because they do have to understand anatomy, whereas a fine artist like myself doesn't. I can get away with not understanding it, and no one would ever know.
You study anatomy, right?
I spent 7 years in my 20s sculpting anatomical structure. So I would sculpt the skeletal structure and then add one muscle at a time until the whole human formed, and then I put skin on a thin layer of clay.
Oh, wow.
So one of them took me 3 years.
And no one will ever see the bottom, the underside of that, right? It's just the skin over the...
Well, that one that took me the longest, the last one I did, I actually cut it up, tore it apart after I was done, because it was study.
Oh, right.
Wasn't, you know, my fine art. Fine art is an emotional expression. That's the difference to me.
Right.
The skill is required to do a good job at it. And so when I cut that piece apart, I was actually kind of like, wow, this leg, I can see all of the muscles just like in the anatomy books.
Like
the groups of muscles. It was pretty neat. So the one over there on the armoire,
yeah,
that's the last remaining of my, that life-size bust is the last anatomy study I have.
Oh, cool.
It's the only one I didn't destroy, but I did 7 full body and 2 life-size heads.
Wow. It was Da Vinci, right, who would cut apart bodies, or was it, he would dissect them and go through their anatomy and so he can draw better.
Yeah, and I think most of them did. I mean, I would have. That day and age, I would have.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, no laws prohibiting.
Exactly.
And then if they didn't do it back then either, like, we wouldn't have a lot of Da Vinci's anatomy. And he's, like, the one that pioneered most of the medical books and things like that, right?
I believe, I'm not 100% certain, but yeah, I know, like, pretty much all of them did it. They would... when it was frowned upon, they would just make it happen in hidden ways, you know? Well, like that, I think he was Ukrainian or Polish, that he dissected his own father after he died. So.
Oh wow.
I wish I could remember his name.
I've always wanted to see one of those people who donate their bodies to science and they microblade them.
Cool.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's crazy.
I went to Body Worlds in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And that guy's brilliant, by the way. Look it up, Body Worlds.
I went to the bodies exhibit in Vegas.
Yeah.
Like real everything, real bodies, yep, real
same
everything.
Thing. Yeah.
Wow.
Just different company.
Like seeing all the nerves in the shape of a human body without the body is insane.
Believe it or not, those ones for the bodies exhibit were actually unclaimed bodies from the tsunami in Indonesia.
Really? Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't know that.
The other guy, the guy that does Body Worlds, his are all donated by people. But that's a little tidbit.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Anatomy nut here.
I mean, this podcast turned out pretty cool. Just like a bunch of random stuff. We never do that on a podcast, so it's like kind of... It's better to do it that way, I think.
Yeah.
Because, like, when we do a podcast, we do, like, real research hours. So you want to end there?
Sure, yeah.
Good for a podcast? I'm curious. I didn't look at Marcus's yet. I'm curious what the hell he did.
Yeah, what'd you do to my lady?
I just turned her into half snake foot in there.
That's freaking awesome. That took you an hour?
I even got, like, I added more to the eyeball and then made the eye, this eye snake-like, that eye human-like.
Nice.
Wow. I didn't have a regular tongue coming out this way, but it looked kind of funny to me. I was like, no, I'll leave that alone. Leave that alone.
And I'm almost
hacked her ear off there for the snake ear.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome.
Then we got an owl.
Yeah, the owl. What do you think? How did that do?
Pretty good. It's hard to bust anything out in an hour.
Yeah. I was
afraid to touch it, you know, for so long, and after I was like, just go ahead and do
for
it.
For a half hour, this was much larger than it is now.
The old whittling, whittled it down.
Well, and... Well, this has been... this is awesome. I'm happy we did this.
Yeah,
and,
me too. This was fun.
And we hope to come back and do it again. I think that'd be kind of cool. And do some more sculpting with you and... Are you in? Do you want to do the Halloween series with us this year?
So I don't recall like any of the details, but heck yeah.
Cool. Just sculpting. We need at least maybe like 4 pieces of something creepy, something we can put out every week on our podcast and okay. Point some fingers at you.
Halloween, yeah. So my last show is in September. And how? What do you do for a lead up to that?
We usually do the podcast, and then September time is when we start getting into more of the Halloweenish kind of feeling with the podcast. And then
I'm surprised you didn't say Halloween.
I know, I don't want to say that this time. And then we kind of start promoting the artist like mid-September, early September. Okay. And then get the hype up, and then the videos on Facebook, I think we're doing like 5,000 to 7,000 per video, something like that.
Yeah,
we're putting out, geez, like a lot of videos that time, huh?
The video, yeah. The
yeah
podcast is a little different,
so it'll be something pretty cool to work on.
Oh, so you want to sell the artist piece?
Well, it's up to you. I mean, yeah. you can just create the art piece, and then whatever you sell, it's your money. And
yeah, I'd whatnot. Probably just do it for fun, because you know, the that's what I sell is the bronzes, and
right, yeah,
occasionally I'll do a one of a kind for a friend or right. Birthday or you know,
yeah,
cool.
So
I need something. Well, this has been an awesome experience, and we're gonna go through and show some of what we've done and what Marcus has done. Butchered.
I didn't do this whole thing. I just altered it a bit.
So Tyrell,
so nobody thinks I created this thing.
Thank you. I really did it.
I know.
Tyrell Johnson is on Facebook, right? You have a Facebook page?
Yep. Tyrell Johnson Fine Art.
Awesome. And we'll link those in the description on the podcasting platforms. My name is C.D. Enoch. This is Marcus. And this is Tyrell Johnson, our special guest tonight. And you're listening to Fallen Hour Radio. Cool.
Good. Alrighty.
That was fun.